expressed on the following program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Absolute Broadcasting, its staff, or advertisers. It's time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN. Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Hi, I'm Rahel.
And Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real. Boker Tov lekol amazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN, 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. We are a community-supported program, so we depend on your support to stay on the air. So we'd like to extend our thanks to all of those who love and support our efforts on behalf of spreading the good news about Israel. Keep the donations coming. It's thanks to you that we're still here. So we're always chronically fundraising. If you want to visit our website, you can find us at israelisreal.weebly.com. Israel is Real, one word, .weebly.com. And you can email us at israelisreal1590@gmail.com. israelisreal1590 at gmail.com. We'd like to focus on one of our sponsors, Vision.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? To receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about the Vision's educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision's website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nh4israel.org.
Thank you, Sonia, and thank you, Vision. We like to always start our show, top of the morning, with a Hebrew word. And our Hebrew word today is masoret.
Yes.
Sonia, what can you tell us about masoret?
Well, masoret, it's from the verb limsor. Limsor meaning to transmit, to convey a message. But it is also about a hidden secret, if you want, or a given information. Masoret can be a written or an oral system of laws, oral customs that have been passed down through generation. The words come from the Latin word, the tradition. This is the name of Masoret, come from the Latin word tradio, which means tradition, to hand down or hand over. Tradition are usually customs, events, and stories that have been handed down through generation. Oral tradition are stories or information which has been passed on by word of mouth. This can be very ancient and are common to the pre-literate societies.
You know, Sonia, I really appreciate that you are so wise.
Oh, thank you.
And how do you know all of these things? I mean, it's just a word.
Yes, it is just a word. But having in mind that Hebrew, it is a language of roots. And those roots are spreading themselves all over. And you can have subjective and you have verbs and you can have adverbs and you can have adjectives. It is very interesting to see what it is actually means and what is the root of this. And I think that also I'm looking in dictionaries. It's not something that I'm taking only from myself. But I think that it's very interesting to speak Hebrew. It's not a regular language.
We're both also Hebrew teachers as well in our other lives and one of our many lives. And Hebrew, we always talk about the word, but we never actually talk about the structure and all of that. And it is fascinating language. It's a very fascinating language that
it is.
And
what it is really fascinated here is that if you are going with one certain subject, you can have from the same subject the same root, which will go and will give you a clue about what the text it is all about. But you are never asking why we start with Masoret suddenly.
Well, we always have a plan.
Exactly.
And our plan today is to introduce our guest, a very distinguished guest, and his name is Louis Reiser. He is a rabbi. Rabbi Louis Reiser has been serving the Jewish community of Derry, New Hampshire, at Etz Chaim Synagogue since 1997. He is a graduate of Hebrew Union College, where he was also awarded an honorary Doctor of Divinity degree, recognizing 25 years of service to the Reform movement. A recognized teacher of Jewish texts, Rabbi Reiser has published a variety of publications and has written several articles based on his Talmud studies. His most recent publication is called The Hillel Narratives, through which Rabbi Reiser has set out, I quote, set out to find the real meaning of the legends of Hillel. What is the Talmud trying to teach us about rabbis, about leadership, and about important Jewish values? Boker Tov, Rabbi Reiser.
Boker Or. Mashkom Kem.
Oh, Yofi.
Okay,
Nayafim.
And we are still speaking in English.
Oh, right. Sorry, I forgot it's English. Rabbi Reiser, we know you a little bit, but we don't know you a lot. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I've been a rabbi for now 34 years.
34? Okay.
It's been a while. I got into it when I was a kid. I wanted to be a lawyer. And as a college student, I found myself changing directions. And the one piece in my history that really changed my direction was a friend of mine died in an accident that felt at the time totally unusual, not the way people die. And I needed to find out what death was about. So And I look back and say, gee, I could have become a doctor and really sort of found a way of treating folks. Instead, I wanted to know more about what is this experience, this human experience we call death. And so I ended up following our Masoret, our tradition, to sort of find what it meant. And that led me into the rabbinate and to studying our tradition and then teaching our tradition.
That's an interesting story, and you're not the first rabbi, apparently, that we've had on here who decided to change from the lawyer track, from being studying law into becoming a rabbi. So there must be something there, I'm not sure.
We'll talk about Talmud, and Talmud really leads into an understanding of law and how to order a society.
Mm-hmm. So... we asked this of all the rabbis that we've had on. Tell us about your function and role as a rabbi. What is expected? What do you do?
You know, it really varies so much. The job description when you're working in a synagogue really has to do with seeing that the services happen, that the holidays are observed, to teach people how to do those traditions, to teach our children both the skills, the Hebrew, and mm-hmm. the ability to function within the service. And so that's one side of this. The more profound side is really to be with people at moments of crisis. There's a woman who's going through the preparation now for an organ transplant. And to sort of be available to talk with her. There's somebody else who's going through experiences of grief and how to be present for grief and how to be present when a baby is born and to be able to celebrate that. I think our Jewish tradition is so much about how to find meaning and holiness within life.
The circle of life.
Yes, and that's the rabbi's job is to sort of be present and help infuse those moments with the tradition that we receive.
It's interesting. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you just published a book called The Hillel Narrative.
I did.
Mazel tov, mazel tov.
First, mazel tov, right.
B'sha'a tova?
Yes. U'mutzlachat. And the question is, our question are based on the link you pointed us to, which was only the introduction of your book.
And so the first chapter also.
Therefore, can you give us a general description of summary about the book, or a summary about the book?
Hillel is one of the seminal characters in Jewish life, in the emergence of the rabbinic movement. And because he sits at such a crossroads, his stories really open up to talk about what is it that was going to develop from that point. I've talked to him as sort of the father of the rabbinic movement, and I think that's a good place to place him in the line of tradition.
So we have to cut for a break. But we're going to come back, and we're going to hear about the Hillel narratives, and we're going to speak more with Rabbi Louis Reiser. This is WSMN 1590, Israel is Real.
WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
I seriously can't believe you're gonna do this.
Hey man, believe it.
Look, I know you'll learn stuff that'll help you with a job in engineering, but buddy, listen, once you walk through those doors,
Look, I'm still gonna be here at home.
Huh?
I'm gonna keep my job, work full time, hang out with you, and be a soldier.
I don't get it.
You're completely clueless about the National Guard, aren't you?
The National Guard is a unique opportunity and a unique experience. You're a soldier. You serve your community as well as your country. You train part-time close to home. And you do it all while you work or attend college full-time.
Look at you. Now you're even thinking about it. You're gonna walk in with me, aren't you?
All right, wipe that smile off your face.
Oh, come on, you know you wanna come in.
Take the first steps to building your career while serving your community and country part-time. Start at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the New Hampshire National Guard, aired by the New Hampshire Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Do you need affordable housing? Are you or someone you know at least 62 years of age? Living in Nashua, working in Nashua, or have you been hired to work in Nashua? Are you in need of public housing assistance? Nashua Housing Authority is looking for elderly applicants for its efficiency, one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and fully accessible local waiting lists. Our current waiting lists are very short. If you are interested and would like to fill out an application, stop by our main office on 40 East Pearl Street in Nashua, New Hampshire, or call us at 603-883-5661. Applicants must be income eligible. The following income limits apply. One person living in the household can make up to $44,800 annually. Two persons living in the household can make up to $51,200 annually. Three persons living in the household can make up to $57,600 annually. Four persons living in the household can make up to $64,000 annually. So if you need affordable housing and meet the previously mentioned criteria, stop by or call 603-883-5661 today. Nashua Housing is an equal housing opportunity and offers free translation services.
Catch the 12-Step Radio Show, Steppin' Out, Sunday mornings at 6 on 1590 WSMN.
We're back on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, with Israel is Real. We're two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. As always, we are continuing our fundraising efforts, so visit our website at israelisrael.weebly.com, israelisrael.weebly.com, to find out how to help us stay on the air. One of the ways, and one of the people who helps us ongoing since we started in October, and we're very, very grateful to, is Vern Main and his associates. Countries depend for much of their success and security on their intellectual prowess and advanced technology. Many companies from here and abroad depend on the patent attorneys at Vern Main and Associates to obtain U.S. or global patent protection for their new ideas. Vern Main and Associates is an intellectual property law firm right here in Nashua. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, they're after us again, contact the legal specialists at Vern Main and Associates at their offices on 100 Main Street in Nashua or on the web at vernmain.com. That's www.vernmaine.com, www.vernmaine.com. In addition, drawing on the wisdom well of ancient mystical and spiritual traditions that have merged out of Israel, award-winning American-Israeli troubadour Rachel, that's me, you should be reading this, performs an intriguing acoustic guitar and vocal mix of folk world, traditional and transformational music to create an atmosphere of calm and joy. Rachel, that's me, performs at weddings, occasions, b'nai mitzvah, and parties, at house concerts, businesses, and eateries. And for those in need of a dose of energetic mind, body, spirit, music, medicine as well. So here, you can hear Rachel and contact Rachel, that's me, here at Israel is Real and at www.rachelmusic.com, rahelmusic.com.
Nice to meet you, Rachel.
Thank you. We are back with Rabbi Louis Reiser. And Rabbi Reiser, you're telling us about your book, just recently published, called The Hillel Narratives.
Yes.
Sorry, I get all flustered when I have to advertise myself. It's a little weird, but we'll be back. Okay. Can you tell us, this is kind of a long-winded question.
Okay.
Okay. Well, actually, no. Let's go back a little bit. Can you give us an example of a story that describes in a nutshell, who is Hillel? What is Hillel's character?
Let me share two pieces. One is that there's a series of Midrashim, rabbinic comments, that talk about Hillel is like. So Hillel's compared at one point to Moses, at one point to Ezra, who brings the Torah back from Babylonia. He's compared also to Yochanan ben Zakkai, who after the destruction of the temple by the Romans in the year 70, goes to reestablish it. And those successive stories really tell us that Hillel is in that same line, in that same mold as those who established the Torah and gave the Torah to the people of Israel. And that's probably a really good sense of how the tradition views him.
We want to learn a little bit about what's going on here. So the link that we previewed had a curious story about Hillel and well, he's laughing, he's smiling.
Should I tell that story?
Tell the story.
So there's a And what made the story so interesting to me, it was the first piece that I worked on, was that it's a story that shows up in Hebrew school text. And it goes something like this, that Hillel was this most avid student and would come every day to the academy, and he'd pay half of his wages that he'd earned to the guard at the door as his tuition, and half of it would be used to support his family. But one day he didn't have that tripek, that coin, to be able to offer his tuition, and the guard turned him away. But he was not one to be easily turned away, so he climbed up on top of the roof and listened through the skylight. And then the sort of fast forwards through the day or the night, and the next morning the heads of the academy, Shammai and Avtalion, come, and the room is dark. And they're looking around, is it a cloudy day? And they look up and they see on the skylight this figure of a man. And he's has snowed overnight. He's under 4.5 feet of snow. And they bring him down and they say, ah, this one is worthy of being saved on Shabbat. It was the tradition says that it was Erev Shabbat. It was the day of the solstice. It's a curious story for a couple reasons. One is, well, it's used to say to our Hebrew school kids, see how serious he was and how much joy he got from studying, and shouldn't you get the same amount of joy and want to be just as excited?
Devoted
and excited to be at Hebrew school, if only our students were. But it's an odd story. If it's in Jerusalem, which it tends to be, pretends to be, Jerusalem has never seen 4.5 feet of snow overnight. It's gotten snow.
But miracles do happen.
Miracles do happen. On the other hand, if you wanted to talk about a miracle, we teach our children to come in out of the rain and out of the snow. And somewhere between those first drops of snow and 4.5 feet, you would think that he would come in out of the snow. So that tells me, as I read the story and read it in the original, because when it shows up in Hebrew school books, it doesn't tell you how much snow. You think he got coated with snow. That's not so bad. But 4.5 feet is significant. And it tells you something else is going on, that this is more than just a episode in a person's life, that there's a bigger significance to this.
Okay, so we were going to sort of play with you a little bit here, and not to be mean, sure, but to sort of dramatize the. We understand that Hillel, and he had a colleague who was considered his opponent, his opposing view.
Yes.
Shammai. And that there were two schools of thought.
Yes.
Coming out of Hillel and Shammai. And so we thought we'd be Shammai.
Okay.
And sort of we it's sort of like a law, like a court in a way.
Go for it.
So we came up with we hope they're facts. We're going to say they're facts that we know from both living in Israel and from past experience and personal experience that it does snow in Jerusalem. That
it
is
does.
True. Though it doesn't snow every year, but it does snow. And I've been there when the snow has actually reached up to 1 foot or 2, maybe not 4.5 feet.
Right.
But, and it has snowed maybe for a couple of days in a row.
Right.
So, you know, the fact that there is snow, as you said, is not so insignificant. It's, you know,
The issue is not that it snows, but how much they do. That figure, it's too technical for this setting, but I play with it in the book. That figure of snow becomes significant. It's symbolic, and it begins to match the amount of liquid in a mikveh, in a ritual bath. And so it has to do with that moment of transformation. Mm. And it's in that I think the whole story is. Let me step back just 1 second. You know, I can't say whether a person named Hillel existed or not.
That's what I wanted to ask you, right. Because on your book makes seems to be based on the premise that he might not have been a real person.
Right.
So, and that, truthfully, so, that kind of bothers me a little bit.
Bothers
so I
a
wanted
lot of
to
folks.
Challenge you on that. Bothers I wanted to be Shammai on that.
Bothers a lot of folks. You're not alone. I can't say whether such a person existed. What I can say is that these stories are not biographical stories in the way we normally think of it. Mm-hmm. We tend to think of a biography as this is an ordering or a retelling of the various episodes of a person's life. These stories are not that. These are finely crafted literary stories in which virtually every line really points beyond itself. And they're crafted to tell a larger story. And in that they match what was biography in ancient times. I mean, we understand biography differently today. But, you know, in the same way that that amount of snow begins to represent the water in a mikveh, in this ritual bath, which is this moment of transformation, the whole story of Hillel trapped on top of the roof under snow is really talking about a transformation that's taking place in Jewish life.
Well, we can see that you depict Hillel as a very serious, devoted student of Torah. And I guess that you can look at the sages then who see him and are transformed by the fact that he would have stayed and, realize his seriousness.
Right. There's also another level of transformation that the Judaism that preceded him, that was the Judaism understood and lived in the Second Temple times, is different than what followed him. There's a story that's told that a person came to him looking to convert to Judaism, and that this person's motivation was that they'd heard a priest at the temple reciting the text of the Bible, and had heard these wonderful descriptions of the beautiful clothing that the high priest wore. And he comes and he says to Hillel, he comes first to Shammai, who says, convert me on the condition that I can become a high priest. And Shammai says, go away, fool. And he comes to Hillel, and Hillel says to him, here's the text, go study it. And he goes away, and he studies it, and he comes back, and he says to Hillel, hold it, why not? Didn't anybody ever tell me that if you're not in that line of priests, you can't, not only can't you become high priest, you can't even approach there. You will be killed. Whoever comes and touches that which is holy when they're not supposed to and they're not prepared to is at risk. He says, now, how come nobody ever told me about that risk? And Hillel says, now you've become a student of Torah. And he converts him. And that methodology, that sense of creating disciples, is new. It is something that evolves after the destruction of the temple that was not there before. And so Hillel is really the seminal character, the pivotal character in that transformation.
Did you want to
continue?
We like to take turns.
Okay.
But it sort of brings us to what we were thinking about as, you know, the two, as that pivotal moment, you know, between temple priesthood as the authority, a different kind of society.
Yes.
That is transformed because of the destruction of the temple as well.
Absolutely.
And a movement that they don't rebuild the temple at that time, and it moves us to another kind of authority, which becomes the rabbinical.
Yes.
The rabbinical council, the Sanhedrin, and what we've got today with Jews dispersed all around the world. And what is that? Can you describe that a little bit?
In a sense, what the sages did was brilliant. They had to transform Judaism from something that was rooted
concrete,
in a place.
Very concrete.
And to something that could be carried around the world. But they could have done that by creating sort of a philosophy. And you know, we still talk about the philosophies of Aristotle and Plato, and they've changed the world. But the rabbis didn't want to create a philosophy as such. They wanted to create a way of life. And so we talk about halakha, which often gets translated, I think, poorly as Jewish law. Mm-hmm. It's really more of the path that we walk.
Coming from the root.
Yes. And the path was to create holiness, to transform ordinary, everyday events into something holy. And that you could do that regardless of whether you were high-born or low-born, whether you were anywhere in the world, that everyday activities, eating, business, friendship, could all be made holy. That's an amazing, amazing feat to succeed at that.
Right, and that it didn't focus around a structure, a physical structure, but now
Correct.
A spiritual structure
right.
That we lived in a physical way.
Correct, and that ability to study that and to learn that and to practice that was available to absolutely everyone. It wasn't limited to this group of folks and others just had to follow them. Everybody had direct access to the text.
We're going to have to break, and we'll ask you the next question after the break, but maybe in a word or two, could you sort of pinpoint a word that would place Hillel at that place? I mean, what makes him the pivotal character.
Well, I chose the title Hillel Narratives because I think that those stories collect around his character as a way to say, we're going to set out the program based on who he was.
Okay, great. We're speaking with Rabbi Louis Reiser and also about his book called The Hillel Narratives. This is WSMN 1590, where Israel is real. We'll be back.
WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
Do you need affordable housing? Are you or someone you know at least 62 years of age, living in Nashua, working in Nashua, or have you been hired to work in Nashua? Are you in need of public housing assistance? Nashua Housing Authority is looking for elderly applicants for its efficiency, one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and fully accessible local waiting lists. Our current waiting lists are very short. If you are interested and would like to fill out an application, stop by our main office on 40 East Pearl Street in Nashua, New Hampshire, or call us at 603-883-5661. Applicants must be income eligible. The following income limits apply. One person living in the household can make up to $44,800 annually. Two persons living in the household can make up to $51,200 annually. Three persons living in the household can make up to $57,600 annually. Four persons living in the household can make up to $64,000 annually. So if you need affordable housing and meet the previously mentioned criteria, stop by or call 603-883-5661 today. Nashua Housing is an equal housing opportunity and offers free translation services.
The Telegraph, keeping you connected to your community for pennies a day.
When news breaks,
The Telegraph is there. When the community needs a watchdog, The Telegraph is there. When it's time to celebrate the accomplishments of our young athletes and scholars,
The Telegraph is there.
All for pennies a day. The Telegraph has been recognized for 7 years in a row as the best small daily newspaper in New England by the New England Press Association. Find out why one of New England's best daily newspapers is your daily newspaper for only pennies a day.
These days, carrying a mortgage can overwhelm even the strongest person.
Don't I know that?
But there is a way to help ease your struggle, especially if you're facing foreclosure. One option may be advice from a certified foreclosure prevention specialist. It's absolutely free. Don't struggle. Learn more at www.makinghomeaffordable.gov. That's makinghomeaffordable.gov. Because foreclosure is not a foregone conclusion. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Plan your night, plan your weekend. Listen for the WSMN Community Calendar all day long on 1590 WSMN.
We're back on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, with Israel is Real. We are two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. We are always fundraising, and we enjoy your support and donations. Please keep them coming at israelisreal.weebly.com, israelisreal.weebly.com. I'd like to just mention the music that we've been listening to is from a friend of mine who does live in Israel. She was part of the original all-women's band called Tofa'a, and the CD is called Ne'imot Yitnu, right? Ne'imot.
Yep.
You can read that, George.
That's my language right there.
Right. Ne'imot Yitnu. It's available on CD Baby, and you can also go to our website to find out more about it. We'd like to also mention another sponsor, the same sponsor as before, who we greatly appreciate, Vision.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel and informs you of how its technical advanced personnel benefit you? Did you know that Israeli scientists have developed a way to use white blood cell from healthy donor blood to stimulate the patient's own body to complete the healing process, especially for complications following surgery? To receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about Vision's educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision's website at www.nh4israel.org. That's www.newhampshireforisrael.org.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're speaking again with Rabbi Reiser, Rabbi Louis Reiser, who, and about his book called The Hillel Narratives, and about being a rabbi and all sorts of things. Our next question, Sonia, would you like to ask that?
Yeah, it is written in Pirkei Avot, The Ethics of Our Fathers. The sages and the interprets of the written and the oral Torah, that Anshei HaKnesset HaGdola, the men of the great assembly, which later become known as the Sanhedrin, offer three sayings: be deliberate in judging, educate many students, make a fence around the Torah. And debating the second saying, educate many students, Talmidim Harbe, we know that Hillel and Shammai had a differing option about the meaning of the saying. Shammai suggested it meant that only the best and brightest should be educated, while Hillel suggested it meant to teach everyone. That every person, young or rich, old or poor, intelligent or not, should be educated and properly taught. In your option, how does this saying apply to Jewish education today, and more specifically, to Jewish education and your own synagogue?
Let me answer that with a story from 20 some odd years ago, more.
That's what I love about rabbis. They always answer with stories.
I was the Hillel rabbi, the Hillel on campus for Georgia Tech.
Named after
Manta,
Hillel.
Apparently. A student came up to me. I was there just with a table with information, and said, you know, she was Jewish, and she'd be willing to talk to me, but she really didn't want to participate in any of our activities because they really weren't relevant to things that were going on today. And so I said to her, so what is it that you're involved with that you think Judaism doesn't speak about? She said she was working on a project on solar power. And I said, hold it. You have to understand that Judaism has a tremendous amount to say about ecology and about the environment. There's a passage in Leviticus that talks about that when you build a city, you have to leave a green zone around it. I said, this is, from ancient times, these were clear concerns that were taught through Jewish ethics. She looked at me like I was from Mars. She said, nobody ever said that to me. What Jewish education has to do is to let everyone know, every Jew, and to let the world know that Judaism is not simply about a series of rituals. It's really about this way of life we spoke about before, this halakha, and that it speaks about all of the ways we live in the world. And so she needs to know that it speaks about environment. The Nir Tamid, the eternal light that shines over our altar in the synagogue, is powered by solar power.
For example.
And I hope that our students see that and understand that that's there not as a something that's cute, but something that's about a value. It's about the ethics and the way we value the world. So I hope that through what we do in the synagogue, that we convey those values and that those values find ways to get expressed not only through ritual, but also through the way we walk our daily lives.
I want to bring Israel into the picture because we are a show about Israel, and Hillel is very much obviously about Judaism.
Yes.
And Israel, I believe, is the focal point of our Jewish way of life. So it was sort of a little bit going back to the other idea of Hillel representing a gateway between the temple priesthood and the rabbinic authority, but also sort of... could you make any comparisons of this transition for, you know, temple priesthood versus rabbinic authority and Israel versus the diaspora to Judaism at large? It's maybe not right to compare American Judaism to Judaism in Israel, but maybe we can talk about that a little bit.
The place that I would pick this up, I guess, is that that I think that we have a common strain that gets expressed in different ways. The experience of being Jewish in a majority culture, when everything around you opens up to that, so that when it's a Jewish holiday in Israel, the work world stops. And that
you know that because you've lived there.
I was there as a student in the 70s, and on Yom Kippur, there is nothing on the streets. I mean, it's the only time in my adult life that I have not attended services on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, because it was such a wonder to walk the streets and to have the streets of Jerusalem empty. That was a religious experience. Mm-hmm. What I think ties us together is these classic texts of the Jewish world, the Talmud and the Zohar and all of these texts that we've got really inform our ethics and our approach to the world. And if we can, that opens a discussion between Israel and American Jews that we can share and inform, and it'll show up differently in each place.
What I'm sort of concerned about is Israel. You know, I have both the American and the Israeli experience.
Sure.
I'm both.
Yes.
At this point, having lived half of my life in Israel and half of my life in America, and back in America now, and I sometimes get very concerned that the sense and the connection to Israel and with Israel gets lost sometimes in American Jewish education and some of our values. And so I'm curious about how, you know, you can only speak maybe for your own synagogue, maybe for others, but how do we sort of instill and integrate that love and connection and relationship with Israel as a focal point, and maybe through the Hillel narratives? I'm not sure. How does that work in American education?
I will tell you that I've seen most powerfully in our synagogue, and it's interesting because Eitz Chaim Synagogue is very young. We're 15 years old. And, for many years, there were none of our kids had direct experience of Israel. And through with the support of the Jewish Federation, and then later with the support of the Birthright programs on campus, we've had kids going to Israel. what happens is they go there, they are amazed at their experience. They're transformed. And they come back and they tell the younger kids. And we now have the younger kids being led by the older kids better than the adults. And they are looking forward to their chance to go and be in Israel. And when they're there, they're coming back with a new understanding of that place, a renewed sense of their own connection. It is the most powerful thing that we can do. And in a sense, I think the most powerful connection that I can do for our kids is let the older kids share their experiences with the younger kids, because they're bubbling. They're excited.
It's exciting. And it also, I think the teaching of Hebrew, the encouragement to go and spend time in Israel and view Israel not as the ancient place that we learn from our texts, but to see it really now as a modern, thriving country and a Jewish state.
Some 20 years ago, I participated in a interfaith tour to Israel. It was run by a Catholic sister from Seton Hall. And as we were getting onto the bus in Tel Aviv to drive up to Jerusalem, she stood at the front of the bus, and we were some 30 people. I was the only one Jewish in the group. Some Baptist, some Episcopal, some Catholic, a big mix. And this very small woman got up at the front of the bus, and she said, "I want you to know, when you go back, you were not in the Holy Land. You were in the State of Israel."
And she
said it was important, because I asked her about it, and she said, so many people come on pilgrimage and they're expecting the land of the Bible. And she says it is a modern, thriving, bubbling land. It's an exciting place that has history. And you have to know both the history and the present.
Rabbi Reiser, it's been a pleasure.
We've been
speaking with Rabbi Louis Reiser, and also about his newly published book, The Hillel Narratives. Can you tell us, our listeners, where we can contact you, the book? How can we find it?
I've been teaching in a lot of places over the past couple weeks. No, I don't have anything scheduled coming up, but I've taught in synagogues and in churches as well. The book is available on Amazon. It's on barnesandnoble.com, not in their stores. Or folks can contact me directly at rabbi@etzchaim.org.
Great. That's rabbi@etzchaim.org.
Correct.
So thank you, Rabbi Reiser.
It's a pleasure.
And if you don't mind, we're not, learned rabbis as you are. However, we do make a great effort to give our listeners a little bit of a Torah portion each week. So
sounds wonderful.
We're going to speak a little bit this week about
Vayakhel. Parashat Vayakhel, whose focus on the building of the Mishkan, underscored the importance of Shabbat. Chazal, our sages, state, God said to Moshe, "I have a great gift that I have in my storehouse. Its name is Shabbat, and I wish to give it to Israel. Go and explain it to them." Why do Chazal underscore this as a matana tova, a great gift? All gifts are great and wonderful. Every Jew asks the famous question, the dilemma stated in Masechet Brachot, Tzadik v'ra lo, rasha v'tov lo. Why do good people suffer while bad people seem to prosper? The Maharal has the following response. One can really never know the answer to this dilemma. However, in Olam Haba, the world to come, this and many other questions will surely be clearly and properly answered. As we live in this world, the question will always continue in our minds. However, Shabbat is mi'ein olam haba, a part of the world to come. When one enjoys and appreciates Shabbat, one realizes that God has a perfect design to this world, even if one does not understand it. What an important lesson this is to enjoy and to be inspired on this incredible special day of Shabbat Kodesh. Shabbat is the basis of faith in God and the spark plug of our self-development, a time and place when and where we can realize total fulfillment. The head, Rosh, of our faith is Shabbat. Keep it, and it will keep you. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. And I'd like to remind everybody that we're Rachel and
Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real. Our theme song and much of our music sometimes is brought to you by myself, Rachel. And it can be found at rachelmusic.net. You can find me at rachelmusic.net, rahelmusic.net. The theme song is called Hinei Matov. We're on the air every Friday from 10 to 11 in the morning here at WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. Excuse me. We'd like to thank again Rabbi Louis Reeser of Etz Chaim Synagogue in Derry, New Hampshire. He can be found at rabbi at etzchaim.org. And our music today we've been listening to is called Ne'imot Yetenu, Uplifting Jewish Melodies by the Cohen Family, K-O-H-N. It can be found on cdbaby.com. Again, thank you very much. Shabbat Shalom from Israel is Real.